It's Thursday, the 23rd of April, 2025, and you're listening to Weekly Reveille here on Sun Sounds of Arizona. This is your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman, bringing you news of interest to our veterans community here in Arizona. Today we have news from our military news websites, as well as our Veterans Service Organization websites and publications, and of course, as always, information from the Veterans Administration. Well, turn first to Stripes.com, the news website of the Stars and Stripes newspaper, and we have this item from the 22nd of April by Linda F. Hershey. Gold Star Spouses urges passage of bills to help families rebuild lives after a service-related death. Washington. Gold Star Spouses of America urged lawmakers to pass three separate bills that would provide critical assistance to families of fallen service members and veterans who were catastrophically disabled or who died from their service-connected conditions. Tamara Sipes, national president of the nonprofit Gold Star Spouses, testified Tuesday that pensions, indemnity, and dependency payouts administered by the Department of Veterans Affairs often determine if a widowed spouse can remain financially stable after the death of a service member or veteran. While their spouses wore the uniform, they carried the weight of service at home and now carry the lifelong responsibility of preserving their legacy while rebuilding their own lives, Sipes said at a hearing of the House Veterans Affairs Subcommittee on Disability Assistance and Memorial Affairs. Representative Morgan Luttrell, Republican of Texas, the subcommittee chairman, said that the assistance is meant to make life more affordable for grieving families who've lost a veteran or service member. For some, this is what keeps the lights on, Luttrell, a retired Navy SEAL veteran, said at the two-panel hearing, which examined delivery of pensions, survivor benefits, and life insurance payouts. He urged VA officials to continue to provide paper responses by mail to widowed spouses, many of whom are elderly and may not routinely use the Internet. Having better communication is one of the most pressing issues, Sipes said. Many Gold Star members are confused about how the compensation programs work, Sipes said. She raised concerns about the rules for obtaining dependency and indemnity compensation, known as DIC, and survivors' pensions. DIC is a primary benefit for qualifying widowed spouses and dependents that is paid out after a service-connected death. Survivors' pensions are for the widowed spouses of wartime veterans whose deaths were not service-related. But there are income-based criteria for recipients, Sipes said. Clearer explanations about income thresholds and how income is calculated would enable applicants to better understand their eligibility, Sipes said. Sipes said that the threshold sits significantly below the 2026 federal poverty level of $15,960 for a single-person household, effectively excluding thousands of survivors who are struggling financially but do not meet this restrictive definition of indigence. You have to be destitute, Sipes said. Gold Star Spouses said it recognizes that the VA has taken steps to automatically consider applicants for DIC and survivors' pensions. Jennifer Bover, Executive Director of Pension and Fiduciary Service at the Veterans Benefits Administration, said that in many cases the VA is able to provide widowed spouses with the benefits in a matter of days after a service-connected death is reported. While this is a positive development, many survivors remain unaware that this review is taking place and would benefit from clearer communication about how their claims are being evaluated, Sipes said. Gold Star families urged lawmakers to act on key bills. The Sherry Briley and Eric Edmondson Veterans Benefits Expansion Act, Caring for Survivors Act, and the Love Lives On Act. The Sherry Briley and Eric Edmondson Veterans Benefits Expansion Act would award an additional $10,000 each year to veterans with traumatic brain injuries, paralysis, and other catastrophic disabilities related to military service. would also increase benefits by 1% a year for the next 5 years for the spouses of service members killed in the line of duty or who died from their injuries. The bill is pending a House vote after advancing from committee review. The Caring for Survivors Act increases the monthly DIC rate according to the language in the bill. DIC compensation represents monthly payments to eligible survivors, including the spouses, parents, and children of service members who died on active duty and veterans who died from a service-connected condition. It is not exclusively for wartime veterans, but rather for service-connected deaths, according to the VA. Compensation is also paid to qualifying veterans determined to be totally disabled from a service-connected condition for a certain period of time, according to the bill. The Caring for Survivors Act is pending a committee review. The Love Lives On Act removes financial penalties for widowed spouses who remarry. Under current law, surviving spouses who remarry before the age of 55 lose access to certain benefits, according to lawmakers. The loss of benefits is referred to as a marriage penalty. The legislation is designed to allow surviving spouses, regardless of age, who marry again to continue to receive dependency and indemnity compensation, as well as survivor benefit plan annuities, according to the bill. The bill is pending votes in the House and Senate. And that's Gold Star Spouses Urge Passage of Bills to Help Families Rebuild Lives After a Service-Related Death. Next, we have Federal Job Protections for Veterans Would Change Under Proposed Reduction in Force Rule. This is by Linda F. Hershey from the 20th of April, Washington. Disabled American Veterans is condemning a plan by the Office of Personnel Management to change long-held protections for veterans from federal job layoffs. The plan, published as a proposed rule on the Federal Register, could potentially affect tens of thousands of veterans who are federal workers. Titled Reduction in Force, the proposed rule would prioritize performance reviews over a veteran's status and years of service. At a time when hundreds of thousands of veterans serve in the federal workforce, these changes would disproportionately harm those who have already sacrificed for our nation, said Coleman Nee, DAV's national commander. He lambasted the proposed rule as an attempt by the Trump administration to remove veterans' preference protections, which extend back for decades and undermine the balanced framework established by Congress. Preference protections traditionally have provided eligible veterans and their family members certain advantages in federal hiring and job retention, according to OPM. But OPM said it's seeking to revise its reduction in force rules to make them more streamlined, efficient, and merit-based, according to the proposed rule. More than 600,000 veterans work at federal agencies, making the U.S. government a top employer for former military members, according to the Partnership for Public Service. Veterans represent a quarter of the overall federal workforce, according to OPM. More than 385 public comments have been posted since the Federal Register published the proposed rule on March the 5th, according to the Federal Register. The 60-day public comment period runs through May the 4th. The proposed rule describes a regulatory framework as cumbersome and inefficient. Veterans' preference policies began after the Civil War, but the modern-day framework was established by the Veterans Preference Act of 1944, according to OPM. OPM has seen how the current regulatory framework has not always supported agency downsizing efforts in an efficient manner, according to the proposed rule. Tenure is prioritized over job performance, which may cause high-performing employees to be terminated during a reduction in force, while lower-performing, more senior employees keep their jobs, according to the 31-page proposed rule. The proposed rule would continue to give substantial weight to veterans' preference in determining retention order during a reduction in force, while making performance the primary factor in retention decisions, OPM said Monday. The proposal also has no impact on how the federal government hires veterans, and veterans' preference in hiring remains unchanged, OPM said. Josh Chappelle was among dozens of individuals posting comments on the Federal Register without disclosing affiliation with an organization or if they were a veteran who would be affected by the proposed rule. Chappelle said he was concerned that the rule would not be implied impartially. Prioritizing performance over tenure introduces subjectivity into a process that has historically relied on objective criteria. Performance ratings vary widely across supervisors and agencies, while tenure provides a consistent measure of experience and institutional knowledge, Chappelle wrote. The Office of Special Counsel also submitted a four-page public comment supporting the rule change titled, "The Office of Special Counsel's Comments on Office of Personnel Management Proposed Rule on Reduction in Force." The office works to ensure that the government workforce is built on competence rather than cronyism or outdated rules, wrote Charles Baldus, senior counsel and designee of acting special counsel Jamison Greer of the Office of Special Counsel. Baldus described the proposed rule as a long overdue corrective action. Consider a dedicated employee who consistently exceeds expectations, innovates to improve processes, uncovers operational inefficiencies, or reports misconduct through proper channels, Baldus wrote. That employee could lose their position in a RIF simply because a less effective colleague has accumulated more years of service. And that's federal job protections for veterans would change under proposed reduction in force rule. But let's move on to militarytimes.com, and we have this headline by Tanya Nouri. Pentagon to upgrade Valor Awards for Marines at site of Abbey Gate bombing. This is from the 22nd of April. Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth has directed the Marine Corps to elevate Valor Awards for those ensnared in the deadly bombing at Kabul's airport's Abbey Gate in August 2021, after an internal review found several commendations had been inappropriately downgraded. Chief Pentagon spokesman Sean Parnell said that following a probe of the original distinctions, the awards have been upgraded to better reflect the risks knowingly accepted by the Marines of Company G, 2nd Battalion, 1st Marines, and their bravery in saving lives under enemy fire. The Marines at Abbey Gate were positioned in the direct blast zone with minimal cover, fully aware of an imminent suicide attack, yet they held their ground to keep evacuation operations running, Parnell said in a statement on Wednesday. Their actions that day were heroic. The original awards did not reflect that reality. Today's upgrades correct that injustice. Parnell added, to the Marines of Company G and to every service member who stood at Abbey Gate, your actions were seen, your sacrifice was measured correctly, and your valor is now properly recognized. After then-President Joe Biden began a full withdrawal of U.S. forces from Afghanistan, more than 5,000 American personnel oversaw the evacuation of roughly 100,000 Afghans seeking to flee Taliban rule, despite a State Department warning of credible threats against Hamid Karzai International Airport. On August 26th, as crowds converged on Abbey Gate, a suicide bomber struck, killing 13 U.S. service members and approximately 170 civilians. Those killed included 11 Marines, a soldier, and a sailor. The attack marked the deadliest day for American forces in decades and became emblematic of the chaotic withdrawal from Afghanistan. President Donald Trump, upon returning to office, ordered a comprehensive review of the U.S. military's departure from Afghanistan. The Pentagon said last week that the inquiry has since examined more than 9 million documents, with its findings expected to be published in the coming months. The Marine Corps did not immediately respond to requests for comment on how many Marines received upgraded awards. And that's Pentagon to upgrade Valor Awards for Marines at site of Abbey Gate bombing. We dip back into history for this item from Military Times. The Spanish Flu, a deadly postscript to World War I, started at a U.S. military base. This is from the 22nd of April by Claire Barrett. In the spring of 1918, as American soldiers prepared to go over the top for the first time during World War I, a handful of Army physicians began noticing a strange sickness that began to grip service members. The virus, resulting in deadly pneumonia, struck down previously healthy young men within days, some within hours. Postmortem exams revealed soggy lungs with evidence of hemorrhaging, according to the National World War I Museum. Unbeknownst to them, influenza was about to ravage the U.S. military and the world in a way unseen since the likes of the bubonic plague in the 1350s. The origin of the virus is believed to have begun from Haskell County, Kansas. Young men from Haskell County were training at nearby Camp Funston in what is now Fort Riley, Kansas, according to the Army. On March 4, 1918, the first influenza cases were identified at the Army base. Within 3 weeks, 1,100 of the 56,222 troops at the camp were sick. Then, as men boarded crowded transport ships and lived in close quarters, both behind the lines and at the front, influenza struck, killing more lives in just 18 months than the First World War claimed by bullets in four. The resulting numbers are staggering. The influenza epidemic claimed the lives of an estimated 50 million people worldwide, afflicting 25% of the U.S. population, and in just 1 year, dropping the average overall life expectancy for the nation by 12 years. In retrospect, a more efficient incubator and disseminator of an infectious disease to pandemic proportions could not be imagined, according to the Kansas University Medical Center. Young, non-immune persons concentrated in close quarters for weeks and then dispersed throughout the world. Military transport ships were the likely vector of influenza, which was well established around the world by August of 1918. Within the U.S. military, an estimated 116,516 to 117,000 were killed during the war, including 53,402 battle deaths. Of that, approximately 43,000 service members were killed by the influenza virus. During the post-war period, the devastation wrought by the flu inspired the U.S. Army Surgeon General to commission research to develop a vaccine to ward off influenza. By the 1940s, the first clinical trial among troops demonstrated excellent efficacy, leading to the first influenza vaccine mandate for military personnel in 1945. 7 million men and women were rapidly vaccinated, according to the National Library of Medicine. However, the effectiveness of the vaccine began to shift, leading to the withdrawal of the military's influenza vaccine mandate in 1949. According to the NLM, increasing understanding of antigenetic shifting of influenza virus became clearer and combatable, and the influenza vaccine once again became mandated again in the early 1950s to preserve the health of the force. That mandate remained active for over 70 years until Tuesday, with the Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth's announcement that the flu vaccine requirement was no longer mandatory, effective immediately. Typically, the Defense Department aims to inoculate more than 90% of active duty personnel, and according to an October 2025 Armed Forces Health Surveillance Division report, the program has been a major factor in lower rates of hospitalizations among service members than national U.S. rates. According to previous Military Times reporting, the incident rate of hospitalizations for flu among recruits from 2010 to 2014 was 70 per 100,000, compared with the overall military rate of 7.4 per 100,000. And that's the Spanish flu, a deadly postscript to World War I, started at a U.S. military base. Next, from MilitaryTimes.com, we have Advocates Press for Preventive Programs, VA Benefits for Struggling Vets. is from the 16th of April by Patricia Keim of Military Times. With more than 100,000 American veterans incarcerated in the United States, advocates say more investment is needed for the transition from military to civilian life and services for those who have run afoul of the law. Representatives from specialty courts and veterans legal organizations pressed Congress Wednesday for expansion of the Veterans Treatment Court System and reinstatement of some Veterans Affairs benefits for imprisoned former service members. They argued that while not all veterans convicted of serious crimes would benefit, those with other than honorable discharges or service-connected mental health or substance abuse disorders should have the opportunities to change their lives. Corey Schramm, an Army veteran who developed post-traumatic stress disorder after 3 deployments to Iraq and later was arrested following a blackout that involved a weapon, said a Kansas veteran treatment court, where he underwent 2 years of treatment and mentorship, saved his family. I was on and off probation before I went to veterans treatment court, and when I showed up, I thought I was going to play the system, go through the motions. Boy, was I ever wrong. VTC is not a shortcut, Schramm said during a hearing Wednesday before the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee. First Veteran Treatment Court was established in 2008 in Buffalo, New York, to provide medical treatment, supervision, and mentorship to former service members with nonviolent criminal convictions related to service-connected addiction or mental health conditions. Today, there are more than 600, and the Department of Veterans Affairs employs hundreds of Veterans Justice Officers to support veterans in jails or who are on parole, probation, or in the court system. But many veterans remain unaware of programs tailored to them or lack access to available services because they were discharged from the military with general or other than honorable discharges, rendering them ineligible for many Veterans Affairs programs and benefits. Others may have lost access to their VA benefits when they were sentenced, since disability compensation is reduced when a veteran is convicted of a felony and incarcerated for more than 60 days, and VA health care benefits stop when they enter a prison health system. Rose Carmen Goldberg, director of the Veterans Clinic at the University of Washington School of Law, argued that the incarcerated veterans should have access to VA behavioral health care, which provides expertise in combat-related mental health issues, sexual trauma, or other service-specific concerns. Access to VA mental health care can literally be life-saving. Veterans with a less than honorable discharge who are unable to access VA mental health care have a significantly elevated risk of suicide, a difference that disappears if they gain access, she said. Goldberg proposed that imprisoned veterans have access to VA services through telehealth, and she supports a bill, the Get Justice Involved Veterans Behavioral Assistance and Care for Key Health Outcomes to Maintain Empowerment Act, sponsored by Senator Angus King, Independent of Maine, and Senator Pete Ricketts, Republican of Nebraska, that would do that. VA-furnished mental health care is critical because it's more effective than private sector care, Goldberg said. Another key to improving outcomes for veterans who leave the service is reforming the Defense Department's Transition Assistance Program, which several panelists argued was ineffective for preparing service members for non-military life, the panelists said. According to retired Army Brigadier General David Mack McEwen, director of the Veterans Justice Commission at the Council on Criminal Justice, the Defense Department spends billions on recruiting and training, but just millions per year on TAP. A commission found that TAP, and that's that Transition Assistance Program, did not prepare 44% of its attendees for transition, and 22% of transitioning service members never attended. The result is a fragmented and under-resourced system that leaves too many service members ill-prepared for civilian life. This lack of preparation increases their vulnerability to involvement in a criminal justice system, McEwen said. Committee Chairman Senator Jerry Moran, Republican of Kansas, conducted the hearing to better understand how to help veterans in judicial system and prevent them from entering it in the first place. Moran sponsored a bill that was approved in January to fully fund veterans' treatment courts and provided $4 million to establish a national center for veterans' justice. We need to make sure that veterans who carry scars with wounds, visible and invisible, are not forgotten, Moran said. Yet many jurisdictions do not have a veterans treatment court, or those in law enforcement or the court system aren't aware of those programs. Former Kansas Supreme Court Chief Justice Lawton Nuss, a former Marine, said more courts are needed, noting that in Kansas, of the 89 veterans who have graduated in the past decade from the VTC program, just five have later been arrested, a 95% success rate. According to Nuss, one of the first graduates from the Johnson County VTC was a combat veteran who told him he would have been better off being killed in Afghanistan instead of coming home and being arrested for committing a violent crime. He described his shame to me as, "I went from hero to villain," Nuss said. This justice-involved veteran suffered from unhealed PTSD. As has been said about such veterans, a painful paradox is that fighting for one's country can render one unfit to be its citizen. The panelists also pressed for changes to the GI Bill that allow more veterans to access education benefits. According to McEwen, the original GI Bill called for all veterans, except those who received dishonorable discharges, to receive education benefits. McEwen said that since the original language for the GI Bill was written in 1944, the VA has changed eligibility requirements. Congress explicitly wrote that individuals who are not discharged under dishonorable conditions should be eligible for VA care and benefits. However, the VA's implementation is not aligned with this plain text, resulting in the unlawful denial of services to hundreds of thousands of veterans with other than honorable discharges, McEwen said. Moran said he believes the VA and Defense Department must improve services for transitioning veterans, but community organizations are vital to supporting veterans as well. All of our witnesses provide examples of why we work to support veterans when they transition out of the military and the value they add to our communities and our country after their service when that transition goes well, Moran said. And that's Advocates Press for Preventive Programs, VA Benefits for Struggling Vets. You're listening to Weekly Reveille here on Sun Sounds of Arizona with your volunteer reader, Chuck Kaufman. I'd like to remind you, you can listen to Weekly Reveille and other Sun Sounds of Arizona programming either as it streams or at a time of your choosing by going to the Sun Sounds of Arizona website at sunsounds.org or by downloading the Sun Sounds of Arizona app. And that's available for your Android, phone, or tablet from the Google Play Store. And you can get it for your iPhone or iPad from the Apple App Store. And you can always listen to Sun Sounds of Arizona streaming on your Amazon Dot, Echo, or Show. Well, let's turn to a publication of one of our veteran service organizations, in this case, the VFW. This article, The Ever-Evolving VFW Buddy Poppy. And just a reminder, Buddy Poppies will go on sale. They'll be available at your Walmarts locally with volunteers at their stands in front of the store. And if you have a chance, make a donation. It's helpful to those veterans that need that support. This article, from Hollywood stars to children, from VFW's national home and VFW's dutiful members, the flower of remembrance has been distributed since 1922. Since 1922, Buddy Poppies have been synonymous with the VFW. In the beginning, the blood-red flowers were distributed to benefit widows and orphans of veterans. VFW leaders realized early on that children who directly benefited from Buddy Poppy donations would make excellent promoters of the program. To that end, a tradition began in the 1920s to have a girl from the VFW at National Home in Eaton Rapids, Michigan, annually present a Buddy Poppy to the President of the United States. Though no longer followed, this practice continued for many years. Today, a child from the National Home is selected each year as the Buddy Poppy Child. He or she attends the VFW National Convention and is treated with celebrity status. Prior to this practice, movie stars played a large role in marketing the Flower of Remembrance. In the 1940s and 50s, an actress from a Hollywood motion picture studio was selected as the annual Buddy Poppy Girl. Some of the more famous starlets were Joan Leslie, 1941, Jane Wyman, 1942, Doris Day, 1950, Virginia Mayo, 1951, and Natalie Wood, 1957. Leslie recalled her role as a Buddy Poppy Girl at VFW's National Convention in 1991 in New Orleans. When Warner Brothers cast me in patriotic films, I represented an all-American girl. I believe in the ideals VFW members stand for and fought for. Everyone holds you all in high esteem. The goal in recruiting movie stars was to attract a younger generation who were thought to be lacking in patriotism at the time. The thought was that high school girls would see these Buddy Poppy girls, female movie stars, and also want to volunteer their own time distributing poppies. The selection of Buddy Poppy Girl is our tribute of appreciation to the thousands of younger women who make the success of our annual Buddy Poppy distribution possible, VFW Adjutant General Robert B. Handy Jr. said in 1941. The annual selection of Buddy Poppy Girls began in 1940 and ended in 1961. No one was selected for 1960. Years before, Hollywood stars officially partnered with VFW. Ginger Rogers did so in 1935. The RKO movie star lent her celebrity status to raise awareness for the Crimson Flower. While VFW no longer had ties to Hollywood stars, the Buddy Poppy program is equally successful thanks to the efforts of VFW members. Memorial Day is a prime time for poppy distribution. VFW is well represented in front of grocery stores, retail stores, parks, restaurants, and other locations by members looking to tell a part of the VFW story. VFW Magazine would love to see how your post members distribute Buddy Poppies this month. Email magazine@vfw.org with your photos. Be sure to identify the people in the photo, and you may see your photo in an upcoming issue of the magazine or Checkpoint. And this article, The Ever-Evolving VFW Buddy Poppy, is by Janie Dyhouse, and she can be connected at jdyhouse@vfw.org. We'll turn now to the Veterans Administration for some more news. And this is from the news.va.gov website. Our first article from the 22nd of April. A legacy on the clock. The Volke family carries a soldier's spirit to the NFL draft stage. This is by Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors, or TAPS. When the New York Giants go on the clock for the fifth overall pick at this year's NFL draft, the voice announcing the selection won't belong to an owner or former Pro Bowler. Instead, the podium will be held by the living legacy of Army Major Paul C. Volke. For Tracy Volke, the surviving spouse of Major Volke, and their two sons, Second Lieutenant Andrew Volke and Benjamin Volke, the walk to the microphone is more than just a brush with NFL glitz. It's a high-profile salute to a man whose love for Big Blue was stitched into his family. Due to the long-standing partnership between the Tragedy Assistance Program for Survivors, or TAPS, and the NFL's Salute to Service Initiative, the Volkes will turn a moment of national anticipation into a tribute to a fallen infantry officer who would never choose to miss a game, even when he was serving on the front lines. Paul's love for the Giants was a family tradition passed down by his stepfather, Richard Griffenkranz, an Army veteran who became a father figure to him after Paul lost his biological father at age six. Paul was a huge fan his whole life, said Tracy. He signed up to get season tickets and finally made the list when we were stationed in Georgia, but couldn't justify buying because we wouldn't be able to go. When he was in Afghanistan, Paul had a rug made with the New York Giants logo. Paul Volke, a native of Monroe, New York, graduated from the United States Military Academy at West Point in 1998. He served 14 years as an Army infantry officer, completing 5 deployments to Kosovo, Iraq, and Afghanistan. On June 22, 2012, while serving in support of Operation Enduring Freedom, he sustained fatal injuries from an accident involving a mine-protected vehicle. For his service, he received the Bronze Star Medal with 2 oak leaf clusters and the Meritorious Service Medal. The Volke family's journey with TAPS, a leading national nonprofit organization providing compassionate care and survivor support services for the families of America's fallen military heroes, began shortly after Paul's passing. Andrew and Benjamin both attended TAPS Good Grief camps, where they connected with other children of fallen service members and veterans. Today, the family continues Paul's legacy of service. Tracy now serves as an attorney and chief of client services for the Office of the Staff Judge Advocate at Fort Belvoir. She is also a dedicated advocate for military survivors and recently helped pass a Virginia constitutional amendment to expand financial support for Gold Star spouses. Following in his father's footsteps, Andrew commissioned as an Army infantry officer last year. Benjamin, currently studying political science in college, recently interned with the TAPS Government and Legislative Affairs Department. The appearance at this year's draft marks a decade of partnership between TAPS and the NFL's Salute to Service, a year-round effort to honor, empower, and connect service members, veterans, and their families. The NFL draft is about possibility, said Bonnie Carroll, president and founder of TAPS. It's also about something deeper because behind every name called tonight is a story of sacrifice. We're grateful to stand shoulder to shoulder with the NFL and the New York Giants for this moment. At TAPS, we walk alongside the families of America's fallen heroes, Carroll continued. We support them on their grief journey to do it with respect, remembrance, and honor. Football fans and supporters of the Volke family can catch the first round of the 90th annual NFL Draft live on Thursday, April the 23rd. Coverage begins at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and will be broadcast across multiple networks, including ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network. For more information about how TAPS connects surviving military families with professional sports programs and the entertainment industry to bring hope and healing while honoring their fallen heroes, visit taps.org/entertainment. And that's A Legacy on the Clock. The Volke family carries a soldier's spirit to the NFL draft stage. Next from news.va.gov, we have the parade he never got. And this is from the 22nd of April. Jill Atwood, Communications Specialist, VHA Office of Caregiver Support, writes, Honor Flight Trip turns to tribute. The first thing caregiver Shirley Schultz shared, almost laughing over the phone, is how often it still surprises her. She and her husband started talking and somehow land in the same thought at the same time. A love story. He'll look at me and say, get out of my head, Shirley mused. We finish each other's sentences. After nearly 40 years of marriage, it no longer feels unusual to her, just one of those quiet signs that their lives had long since woven into one another. Shirley's 78, and her husband Bob, a World War II Marine Corps veteran, is 104 years old. Their days are structured. She lays out his uniform for the day and prepares his meals, making sure everything is just right. She keeps track of medications, organizes appointments, and ensures nothing slips through the cracks. Medical visits, paperwork, follow-up, she manages it all with a quiet efficiency that comes from practice, not obligation. It's simply what love looks like now as a wife, caregiver, and best friend. Bob still takes pride in doing things for himself. He remains remarkably healthy, moving through his days with intention, thanks to support from VA doctors and caregiver support program. St. Louis VA social worker Mitzi Hedgecock connected Shirley to the program of comprehensive assistance for family caregivers, linking her to a network of support she didn't realize existed. She found guidance, resources, and other people who understand the reality of showing up day after day. It was her idea. During World War II, Bob served aboard USS California in the South Pacific, operating 20 and 40 millimeter anti-aircraft guns. Over the years, he's talked with Shirley about his long stretches at sea, the waiting, the uncertainty, but one detail stays with her. When the war ended, his ship took a long time to return home. By the time he got back, the post-war parades and celebrations were over. He missed them, not dramatically or with bitterness, just a fact that settled quietly into his story. Shirley was never satisfied with that ending and wanted more for him, some type of closure. That's when she started looking into Honor Flights, whose mission is to celebrate America's veterans by inviting them to share in a day of honor at the nation's memorials. Honor Flights allows veterans to experience the honor, gratitude, and community of support they deserve. Transporting approximately 22,500 veterans annually, Honor Flight Network has flown more than 300,000 veterans to Washington, D.C. since its inception. I wanted him to go. I think it's time, she said. She found herself thinking about what it could mean for him, not just the recognition, but the feeling of standing in a place that honors what he lived through, specifically the Iwo Jima Monument. Wheels up, Honor Flight. The night before their April trip, she could already see it all unfolding, every moment, every step. It was the kind of day she hoped he would carry with him. It made it even more meaningful because it fell on his 104th birthday. She moved through the evening with quiet purpose, laying everything out just so. The medications, the documents, the small but essential details that turn a long journey into a manageable one. The 1 a.m. wake-up call came quickly, but before long, they were on their way to the airport for a 3 a.m. arrival. And then, just like that, everything changed. From the moment they stepped inside, Bob was no longer just a traveler. He was the center of something much bigger. Uniformed Marines stood ready. Well-wishers lined up as if for a parade. And the happy birthday songs began almost immediately, one after another, wrapping around him like a warm chorus. It was indescribable. He really enjoyed it, Shirley said. From that first greeting, Bob and Shirley recognized the careful orchestration of their tour in Washington, D.C. It wasn't just a trip. It was a tribute to Bob's service. Every detail felt intentional, thoughtful, and deeply earned for a 104-year-old hero. For both Bob and Shirley, one moment rose above the rest. At the Iwo Jima Monument, the scene was almost reverent. Active duty Marines formed a line, standing tall as Bob approached. One by one, they saluted him. It was a gesture of respect that said everything, without a single word. And through it all, Bob stayed exactly who he's always been, humble, steady, and a U.S. Marine to his core. "I can't believe they're doing all of this for me," he whispered to Shirley. They lingered there, taking it in, capturing photos, holding on to the weight of the moment. Then came another surprise. Bob was presented with the very flag that had flown over the memorial earlier that day. Along with it, a certificate marking the occasion and a personal challenge coin, a symbol of honor passed from one Marine to another. He was then asked to lead the singing of the Marine Corps hymn. That moment greatly impacted Shirley. "I just broke down and started crying, and all of this on his birthday," Shirley said. The entire trip moved like a whirlwind. Nearly 24 hours of emotion, celebration, and remembrance wrapped into a single unforgettable day. The next morning, Bob woke up half convinced it must have been a dream. But it wasn't. It really happened. You can find more information on the Caregiver Support Program at www.caregiver.va.gov. And you can find out about Honor Flights by going to news.va.gov. slash $S=honor+flight. And that article was The Parade He Never Got. Turn now to the newsletter of the Phoenix VA Healthcare System, Veterans News Now, and this is from the April 16th edition. Phoenix VA recognizes social workers. As part of Social Work Month, Phoenix VA held a breakfast for the social workers who are dedicated to serving our veterans, March 26th at the 32nd Street VA Clinic. The theme for Social Work Month this year was Uplift, Defend, and Transform, which honors the core mission of the social work profession to enhance human well-being, meet the basic needs of all people, and put the special attention to the needs and empowerment of people that are vulnerable, oppressed, and living in poverty. I'm very proud of all the hard work you do day after day, said Associate Director of Patient Care Services Lynette Dorsey, DNP, who spoke at the event. I often hear about your dedication and commitment to supporting our veterans. Your efforts make a difference. Then we have Check Your Skin for Signs of Cancer. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, skin cancer is the leading form of cancer in the United States. The skin is the body's largest organ and has several layers, each with different types of cells that may lead to different types of skin cancers. Melanoma is the most serious type of skin cancer, but is far less common. Melanoma causes the most skin cancer deaths as it can spread to other parts of your body, including the internal organs. Veterans may be at higher risk for skin cancers depending on their level of exposure to the sun and their role in the military. Then they say, veterans, check your skin for signs of cancer. Skin cancer is most common cancer in the U.S. Melanoma has a 99% five-year survival rate when found early. 20 melanoma deaths occur each day on average, and routine skin exams are linked to reduced melanoma mortality. And you can talk to your provider about skin checks. This is from the American Cancer Society, Cancer Facts and Figures, National Cancer Institute, SEER data, and peer-reviewed study on melanoma mortality reduction. Next, VA mental health research opportunity for VA primary care patients. Are you experiencing feelings of general sadness, anxiety, or have had a difficult life experience that causes stress? Are you interested in participating in a mindfulness or problem-solving skills class that could help relieve these feelings? You may be eligible for our Primary Care Brief Mindfulness Training, or PCBMT, research study. If interested, please contact Research Assistant John Flores Martinez for more information. His number, 602-214-6251. What's being studied? They're comparing two types of classes for veterans, a mindfulness-oriented one and a problem-solving skills class. The VA wants to learn which health approaches are most helpful for our veterans. How can I see if I'm eligible? They'll conduct a brief phone screening and then a 60 to 90 minute assessment about your health. If you're eligible, you'll be randomly assigned one of the in-person classes. How long is participation? Participants attend 4 90-minute classes and complete 3 surveys about your wellness. The total study participation is up to 6 months after the final class. You'll receive up to $150 for completion of study assignments. And that contact again is John Flores Martinez, 602-214-6251. Then we have Join Our Class and Click Into Care. This is every fourth Thursday from 9 to 9:45 a.m. at the Southeast VA Clinic, room 1907. You bring your phone, your laptop, or tablet for class participation. There you can learn how to use the VA high-quality telehealth services, VA mobile apps, VVCs, VA.gov, MyHealth eVet, online scheduling, Veterans Health Library, and more. This is for veterans, family members, and caregivers. It's a 45-minute in-person class. again, the fourth Thursday starting April the 23rd, 2026. And it's in the Southeast VA Clinic, room 1907. If you want to enroll, you can call 602-277-5551, and it's extension 6680. Telehealth extends care beyond a traditional office visit. Next, Phoenix VA's 20th Annual Creative Arts Festival, and that'll be Thursday, May the 7th, 2026, 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at the Carl T. Hayden VA Medical Center Recreation Therapy Clinic. Then we have Veterans Trust and VA hits record high, a promising trend for our heroes. 82% of veterans trust VA. You can download the VA's trust report and learn more, and that's available at www.va.gov/initiatives/veteran-trust-in-VA. Then introducing the Claim Assist Portal, a new, easier way to respond to VA claims. VA is making it easier than ever to keep your claim on track. With the new Claim Assist Portal, you'll have a faster, more convenient way to respond when additional information is needed. If you've filed the benefits claim, you may receive an email with a direct link to the portal, helping you respond quickly and confidently so your claim can keep moving forward. No paperwork or scanning or searching through va.gov is needed. Now, this is from an article on news.va.gov introducing the Claim Assist Portal, a new, easier way to respond to VA claim requests. This goes back to March the 4th of 2026. And what they're saying is that you can expect fast notifications. You'll get an email and subsequent SMS text if more information is needed. Secure access. You can log in using the email that received the message, a temporary password provided in the message, and a time-sensitive verification code sent to your email after you log in using the email address and temporary password. Simple responses. You may need to check a box, type a short answer to a question, or digitally sign a form online. Trusted sender. Messages will come from U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. Do not reply at notifications.va.gov. That's the email address. A known VA notify email address that should not go to your spam folder. Faster processing. Responding through the portal helps you move your claim forward faster. What you need to do? Watch for the message. If VA needs more info, you'll get an email and SMS text. You can open the portal, click the link, and follow the instructions to log in. You can respond to the request. Follow the steps in the portal to respond. Helping you stay on track, the Claims Assist Portal makes it easier for you to respond when VA needs more information so your claim can move forward without delays. It's fast, secure, and built to save you time. This is another step VA is taking to simplify the claims process and better support you every step of the way. Using the portal is not a requirement. You can continue to use mail as an option, but the Claims Assist Portal offers a faster, more convenient alternative. That's introducing the Claim Assist Portal, a new, easier way to respond to VA claim requests. That's an item from the Phoenix VA Healthcare System newsletter, Veterans News Now. Our last item, telehealth connects veteran to more than just care. This is from the April the 20th, Gwen McMillan, Communications Specialist, Digital Health Office. Air Force veteran learns that a video screen is not a barrier to building relationships. Ronald Miller lives more than 30 miles away from his nearest VA medical center, so it's not surprising that telehealth is giving him easier access to care and new opportunities to improve his health. But telehealth has also given the 82-year-old Air Force veteran something he hadn't expected, camaraderie and rapport that have extended beyond his video visits. The biggest source of relationship building has been Miller's weekly group therapy sessions. uses VA Video Connect, VA's secure video conferencing app, and that's at mobile.va.gov/app/VA-video-connect. VA secure video conferencing app to meet with other veterans and a group counselor through Northport VA Medical Center's telemental health program. Veterans in the group benefit not only from the counselor's guidance and insights, but also from the time they spend talking to each other. You've got a common background, especially as you get older, and still that bonding of being a veteran, Miller said. We get together, we learn things, and we take those things into our regular life outside of VA. The camaraderie that's developed over the last year and a half or so has been amazing. It's given me a new avenue to meet new friends and to get insight into my fellow veterans and what they've gone through. The bond grew so strong that one veteran started organizing lunches on Long Island for group members. Now it's a regular occurrence. We get together and we talk about things, Miller said. Meeting like this is so easy. We have the lunches all over the island. Creating connections. The sense of connection isn't limited to his therapy group. Miller said he also feels it when participating in VA's virtual chair yoga and in the remote patient monitoring, home telehealth, or RPM-HT program. Although the primary benefits of chair yoga come from movement, stretching, and relaxation, the 10 veterans in his VA Video Connect sessions also chat. We'll say, hi, how are you doing? How have you been? I missed you last week. And we remember each other. That's kind of nice, Miller said. Miller's at-home blood pressure monitoring also provides a personal touch. Every night, Miller takes a reading with the device VA staff trained him to use, then calls in his results. As with all veterans participating in RPM-HT, Miller was assigned a care coordinator to monitor his health, and one who makes sure he receives the care he needs and then advises him on the ways to manage his chronic conditions. When Miller's blood pressure gets high, the coordinator calls to check on him and offer help. Makes me feel cared for, Miller said. I'm not just a number. I'm an individual. And that's all the time that we have for Telehealth Connects Veteran to more than just care. This is your volunteer reader, Chuck Hoffman. I'd like to thank you for joining me for this week's edition of Weekly Reveille, and remind you that you can listen to Weekly Reveille and other Sun Sounds of Arizona programming either at a time of your choosing or as it streams by going to the Sun Sounds of Arizona website at sunsounds.org or downloading the Sun Sounds of Arizona app, available for your iPhone or iPad from the Apple App Store and from the Google Play Store for your Android phone or tablet. And you can listen to Sun Sounds of Arizona streaming on your Amazon Dot, Echo, or Show.